Washington Post reported that there are Ukrainian villages with no men left. How do you see the current situation right now?
Well, Nima, you're quite right. There's great panic in Europe. Ukraine has lost the war for all intents and purposes. And there seems to be an alternative reality still perpetrated by the media and the politicos, the politicians, that says quite something quite different. We can still win. We can still give enough arms and other support so that Ukraine can win. I've never seen 20. I have to tell you, one advantage of having been around a while, okay, is that you see a lot of strange things. I have to tell you, I have never seen anything quite so strange as the existence of this unreality right now that prevails still, even with Victoria Nuland gone from the scene, although she must be lurking in the background. So, what do we have? Well, we have the clear approaching of a defeat in Ukraine, a defeat which the United States and the Western or the European powers that it has cajoled into giving full support. Some of them needed cajoling, that is, the French and the Germans. The people in the Baltics or Poland, they didn't know. They were happy to give Russia a strategic defeat, right? Okay. So, what happens? Well, last July, based on I don't know what, the head of the CIA says Russia has already suffered a strategic defeat. The Russian army, so helpless, has been its defeat has been laid bare for the whole world to see. When did he say that? He said that on July 7th in a Washington Post editorial. Well, 6 days later, Joe Biden, President of the United States, said, yes, it's true. Putin has already lost this war in Ukraine. Last July, okay? Now, have they been asked about this? Has anyone from the White House press corps said, but Mr. Biden, you told us that Putin had already lost, and now you say he's going to win unless we give him 60 billion more. Can you tell us, were you deceived? Now, I don't know what went through the head of the CIA's head, but it was not the facts. It was people telling him and the president what they wanted to hear. And the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, has a long history of distorting intelligence since the time when he was head of CENTCOM, the central command in charge of the Middle East. Okay. So they were given bad advice. But instead of heeding, or instead of recognizing that, they decided to double down. Okay. More aid, more money. Now, you have to realize that Ukraine is out of troops, pretty much. Okay. They've committed all their reserves. Russia is battering away at that long 1,000 kilometer frontier. And there's very little to prevent the Russians from going all the way to the Dnieper River. I, for one, don't think that they're going to rush there. They're going to just go attrition, attrition, attrition. Okay. And give the West time to come to its senses. But the situation is really dire. And the notion that what are we going to do? Well, one thing is, well, let me show you a concrete reflection of this. Now, Putin said some very valid things recently, just a couple of days ago. And he's quoted in this major op-ed just yesterday in the Washington Post by Fareed Zakaria. Now, he's pretty well plugged in. He's the bellwether. He's a sock puppet. You can see what the administration is thinking. So here he starts out this, quoting Putin. The war in Ukraine, the Russian president explained, is for the West. a way of improving their tactical position vis-a-vis Russia. But for us, says Putin, it is a matter of life and death. The fundamental mistake in Western strategy against Russia has been to ignore this reality. Wow! I'm thinking, oh, Fareed Zakaria is starting to not ignore this reality. I mean, a little footnote here. That's precisely what Obama said. 2015. Look, it's foolish to think that you can prevail, or that you give the Ukrainians the idea they could prevail against a much stronger Russia right on their doorstep. Okay? It's not going to work that way, says Obama, because the Russians have a core interest here. What did Putin say? For us, it's a matter of life and death. That's called an existential issue, okay? Now, even Fareed Zakaria is quoting Putin as saying, well, for the West, it's just a way of improving its tactical position against Russia. Okay, well, that's true. It was true in 2015. It's true now. And McGovern is thinking, oh, my God, this is great. Zakaria is going to come around. Next thing he says is, besides, the Russian economy has survived because Putin has done whatever it takes to put his country on a war footing, okay? And then he said, in addition to that, the polling center Levada, who enjoys a relatively favorable ratings in the West, has said that Putin's favorability rating is now 86%. They got that right? 86%, says Zakaria, quoting Putin. Okay, well, quoting what the polls have said. So he says the Russian economy has survived. And after he made all these very accurate points, I'm expecting to say, therefore, ergo, we have to face reality here. And we have to find some way to negotiate ourselves out of this position because it's intolerable. But instead, and I'm using this as an illustrative example of the unreality. And what does Zakaria draw from all this? He says, well, Putin sees himself in a take-no-prisoners battle with the West. Biden and other Western leaders must demonstrate that they too will do whatever it takes. This means using the Russian central bank reserves, now frozen, to help Ukraine. It means accelerating delivery of every kind of weapon that Kyiv needs. The pressure that Putin needs to feel is not long-time economic decline, but short-term military setbacks, loss of conquered territory, higher casualty rates, and a collapse in morale. McGovern comment, what planet are you living on? None of that's going to happen, no matter what you do, okay? Seizing frozen Russian assets is shooting yourself in the foot, just as in the other foot, from all the wounds you've inflicted on the first foot. So, oh, this last thing, Macron. I think you mentioned Macron. He's gone off the deep end, hasn't he? French troops in Ukraine. Maybe not. Well, maybe so. Let's leave it open. And Scholz from Germany and the Polish president, Tusk, meet with him in Berlin just yesterday. And they say, you know, calm down there, Macron, whatever, any troops in Ukraine. That would mean that the Russians would retaliate against us. And that, of course, is precisely what Putin said in no uncertain terms, even saying, look, you know, we have all kinds of ways to hit the cities of NATO capitals as well. People say, well, that means Putin is threatening tactical nuclear weapons. I don't agree with that. If he wanted to threaten those, he would say so. He's got weaponry that can do this job without any nukes in them. Okay, he's got these hypersonic missiles that pack quite a punch. It could put the fear of God in Berlin or Paris or Warsaw very quickly without any possible defense against these supersonic or hypersonic missiles. So here's the last thing that I quote from Farid Zakaria. French President Emmanuel Macron is surely right that the central fact that must guide Western strategy is that Putin cannot win. If that means greater Western involvement, even military force of some kind on the ground, that's better than watching Russian aggression succeed. Macron gave a speech in which he said that conflict is as existential for France and Europe. The West can only gain the upper hand if this war, if it truly believes and acts on this belief. So in the beginning, he says this is not an existential threat to the West. It's a tactical thing to weaken Russia. But he ends up, he says, oh, yeah, well, these guys are right. The West can, it's got to believe that this is an existential threat, just like Macron has said for France. Break, not an existential threat to France. The other thing I'll add on this is that the president himself, President Biden, and others say Putin's not going to stop in Ukraine. Before you know it, he'll be in Poland, he'll be in the Baltic states. He's not going to stop. If you let him get Ukraine, he's not going to, you hear me? He's not going to stop. Well, guess what, folks? Everybody acknowledges now, including the Ukrainians, that Putin not only was willing to stop, but he did stop 6 weeks after the special military operation, the invasion of Ukraine started. What do I mean? Well, he indicated 5 days after the beginning of the operation, look, let's talk this through here. We don't have to kill each other. We're brothers, for God's sake. We're both Slavic peoples. We live together. Let's deal. And guess what? The Ukrainians, when Zelensky had a little bit more flexibility, said, well, that makes sense. It looks like they may take Kiev, so let's negotiate. They met in Belarus and they met again in Turkey. And we have all kinds of people attesting to this. And in Turkey, they got an agreement. And the agreement included that Russia would stop. I mean, you got it? Russia would stop. And Ukraine would remain neutral. And they would deal with Crimea and the Donbas later. They'd thin out their forces. It was a document, it was initialed. And the Ukrainian representatives at those talks in Turkey certified that this was reached and further certified that it was Boris Johnson that the US sent in, the head of the UK at the time, and said, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Because then we won't give you as much as aid as we can give you, and actually a lot of aid there, and weapons, and we will support you if you turn down this thing, if you don't acknowledge that you would be neutral, if you forswear membership in NATO. Man, you don't think you'd get another rifle from us, for God's sake, so turn it down. And he turned it down. Now, we have, as I say, the Ukrainian negotiator. He's not a dissident. He's head of Zelensky's faction in the Ukrainian parliament. He spelled this out chapter and verse. You don't see it in the Western news, but it's there. So what am I saying here? Well, for people who want to say, well, Putin will never stop. He's got imperial ambitions. He's going to go all the way, not only through Poland, he's going to go to the English Channel if we let him, for God's sake. He's just a terrible guy, okay? Well, hey, let's remember, he did stop. He was willing to stop. He withdrew those troops from around Kiev as part of this deal, okay? And as I say, This is not a question anymore. The Ukrainians have come out and admitted it. Ukrainian officials, living people who are leaders of Zelensky's party. And this is kind of news to everyone. It's been in the Wall Street Journal now, for God's sake. But, you know, if you're watching this closely, you know, at the time, as I did, and as I published on it, it was in Ukrainskaya Pravda, the big newspaper in Kiev. The whole spiel, how Boris Johnson came in and put the kibosh on this deal. It was published in Ukrainian official media, for God's sake. Now, why do Americans not know that? Well, you know the answer to that, Nima. And that's why we have to keep hammering around and say, look, you say Putin would stop. Okay, well, do you know that he actually did stop? And then he was overruled, or the puppet Zelensky was overruled. So I think that's simple enough to get through the defense mechanisms of the people who have been really brainwashed on how evil Putin is. You know, if you say he will never stop, well, if you say, well, he actually did, and everybody admits it, including Ukrainians, maybe that will have some sort of dent on people's thinking. So, well, why would he stop? Oh, it might be because he doesn't intend to invade Poland or the Baltic states. Or, you know, when Putin was asked about this, he said, Pachumu, 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 as you may know, is the Russian word. Why? If you've been in Poland or the Baltic states, well, maybe you can identify with them. Why would he want? Why would he do that, you know? So the propaganda is thick. And here we have Fareed Zakaria repeating it, despite the fact that the reality is that people are going to lose. Now, that is, the West is going to lose. And I think Zelensky is not long for this world. What does that mean tactically? Well, as I mentioned before, on the ground, Russian forces have taken Avdiivka, which was the real stronghold, and after which there's not much left on this very even ground here between them and Kiev and the Dnieper River. I think my own view is that if Putin can get a deal where, as the Russians say, realities on the ground are recognized, that is, the four oblasts, the four provinces that have now been joined with Russia and which are voting even now in the Russian election, okay, results tomorrow, that if people come to their senses and say, okay, look, we don't want to kill another generation of Ukrainian youth, okay, that's what's going to happen if we keep trying to give them more weapons and so forth. So let's deal. Now, there's no indication that Biden and his advisors are willing to do that. What do they want to do? They want to prolong the thing. How long do they want to prolong the thing? Until November of this year. Why November of this year? That's the election. And I'll just say one more time. They are very fearful that if they lose the war ostentatiously, if it becomes very clear that they lose the war, then they lose the election ipso facto, it seems to me anyway, okay? And if they lose the election, well, they could end up in jail, for God's sake. The evidence that has been accumulated against not only Hunter Biden, but Daddy Biden, some of their family, and even Sullivan and Blinken, I can spell it out for you. But they've done things in violation of the law, not only international law, but Russiagate, collecting former U.S. intelligence officials to lie about Hunter Biden's laptop. That had an effect on the election. I'm not sure how much effect, but in 2020, that's what happened. So there's lots to be held account for. And so I'll just again emphasize that in my view, these people are very petty. They're very, very personal in terms of watching out for their own personal interests. If they can prolong this war, if they can browbeat the Republicans in the House to approve $60 billion more, Well, that will at least pay the salaries of the Ukrainian officials and more, and probably facilitate enough arms supply. I say that with dubious confidence because there are no Ukrainian men around to man these weapons. So, in part, it's a charade, but it's a charade necessary to win the election. And meanwhile, cui bono? Well, there are lots of people making a whole lot of money out of these arms deals, okay? The money, even Biden and top politicians brag of the fact that, we're not giving that to the Iranians. We're giving that to the military industrial complex right here in the States. There's jobs to be had there. It's all a lie. I mean, well, they are giving it to the military. Jobs? You get many more jobs doing socially useful things, like environmental measures and paying school teachers what they deserve and that kind of thing. So I don't know if the American people will have enough access to real information to inform their decisions, but I really welcome the opportunity to be with you, Nima, and with other people who are really interested in the truth and who have enough followers to perhaps make a dent in this, in the consciousness of Americans as they go to the polls this November.
Polish Foreign Minister Sikorski said that NATO troops are already in Ukraine. If NATO troops are already in Ukraine and they couldn't do anything and they couldn't save the situation for NATO and for whatever they want in Ukraine, why they're talking about sending these troops? Do you think that Washington is pushing this idea of sending Europeans to this battleground?
Nima, I think the key to the answer to your question is that Washington is not a solid, homogeneous entity. There are various factions. There are still a lot of neocons, even absent Victoria Nuland, who want to press this thing forward, who don't shy away from the prospect of hostilities with Russia, for God's sake. This is scary, as I say. It has the hair on the back of my neck standing up straight. So that's what I think is going on here. Now, I think the latest yesterday with Tusk from Poland, Scholz from Germany, and Macron in Berlin, sort of summoned to Berlin for a little talking to. The outcome of that is, as I remember it, well, no, we're going to be really circumspect. We're going to put not putting any troops. Nobody, no NATO troops in Ukraine. So I don't know where Kirby's coming from. Maybe he's just trying to say, well, we don't tell the Europeans what to do, which of course is a big lie. They do tell the Europeans, but it's a faction, as I see it, of the American government. It's the non-entity called Lloyd Austin, who pretty much bends with the wind, and he's not really a player here. So people r run rings around him, and the neocons are still very much in power, and Biden is still working in this alternative universe where he thinks that the U.S. can prevail. Let me give you one more example. I think I made a little note of this here. It's a little unusual. Yeah, here it is. We had this notorious Secretary of State, and before that, she was the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Madeleine Albright under Clinton. Now, I was naive in thinking, wow, isn't this is terrific? We have a woman, the Secretary of State. Well, I hadn't known anything of her background, her tutelage, or that she was of Czech extraction and whom she studied under and all that stuff. But she was a loose cannon, okay? She was the one that said when Leslie Stahl, the interviewer, asked her, Madeleine Albright, Secretary Albright, the sanctions against Iraq have caused 500,000 Iraqi children to die. Do you think it's worth it? And Albright, without batting an eyelash, said, "Oh yes, it's worth it. We think it's worth it." My God, Well, here's what else she said. She said that The US, let's recognize it, is the indispensable nation. The US is the extraordinary. It's the city on top of the hill, okay? And she propounded this with her fellow foreign ministers or secretaries of state. And this week came in a little comment from one of the most widely respected French foreign ministers who served under both Mitterrand and Chirac. And his name is Hubert Védrine, okay? And as I say, he's very well respected, long serving. And he recounts a conversation with Madeleine Albright. And she says, you know, by not supporting the United States in its adventures in Iraq and elsewhere, you are betraying the Marquis de Lafayette. People will remember that General Lafayette came to the United States, helped train our forces so that we could prevail over the British. That was our revolution, okay? So Madeleine Albright has the gall to say, you, French Foreign Minister Védrine, you are betraying Lafayette. Now, Védrine's response, and this is on tape, it's in video now. Actually, Madame Albright, we did not intervene at all to help America. We did it only to annoy the British. It was competition with the British. And here's the key. Besides, says Védrine, if we had known what you were going to become, a kind of arrogant, dominating empire, I think we would not have helped you at all. End quote. So, you know, this is just a come up in Twitter. It's value. It's authentic. It's Védrine saying these things, and you know, that's the rub here. Biden seems to believe this stuff. As a matter of fact, he's not only quoted. He's quoted Madeleine Albright on this vision of the indispensability of the exceptionalism of America, not only in public speeches, but privately in living room conversations. He's up in Maine or somewhere and he's talking. So he believes this stuff, okay? So he's a cold warrior, and the people advising him don't have the courage, if they have the knowledge, to tell him, Joe, it's over. I mean, not Joe, but Mr. President, it's over. It was really nice then, you know, after the war, World War II, and after Vietnam, and after the Soviet Union fell. Soviet Union fell, remember? Okay, well, right now, it's not true anymore. As a matter of fact, the Soviet Union and China are pretty much not only as powerful as the United States, but if you want to talk about exceptional, you want to talk about indispensable, and put the two of them together, and they're far more powerful, the United States. And you know, we really got to tell you, Mr. President, you talk about isolating Russia. Well, guess what? We've isolated ourselves. We're really sorry about that, but let's come to our senses. Let's do a deal on Ukraine. We think Putin would just as soon do a deal as to go to the Dnieper River, for God's sake. Let's take him up on that. At one point, I think I mentioned this on your show before, in October a year ago, so October 2022, Putin made a big, broad hint in one of these major Q&As that Odessa could be, what do you call it, a Yabloko Razdora, an apple of discord, or it could be a way of achieving peace by compromise. Whoa, he said that, okay? It was in response to a canned question. I think it was canned. It looks canned anyway. But no one took him up on that. I don't know if anybody else wrote about that because it came at the end of 4 hours. Today, right? But I wrote about it, and I tried manfully to get it into public media, but outside of interviews like this. And I doubt whether Blinken and Sullivan, their people, even if they had noticed this, they would have had the courage to say, well, looks like we could have a deal if we want one, because they didn't want a deal then. The important thing is they should want a deal now, because no matter how many more arms they pump into Ukraine, I personally doubt that they can make it to the election without having a very clear loss on their record, no matter what they do, okay? That's not to say they won't keep trying. That's not to say they won't use frozen Russian assets to come to the rescue here. My God, they'll do just about anything. Now, would they consider using tactical nuclear weapons? You know, I hate to hear myself saying this. I would not put it past them. And it doesn't matter what McGovern thinks. It matters what Putin and his military advisors have to think, okay? These people are deranged. They're vulnerable. They can lose the election. They may lose their freedom. Would they hesitate to do just a little mini nuke, you know, just a one-tenth the size of Hiroshima? You know, well, I don't know. But the fact that I pose that question, I hope they come to their senses before that. But given all the dumb things they've done all along, and given their intractability with respect to the sensible thing to do now, namely tell Zelensky, look, the job, it's up, okay? You've lost, we've lost, we're going to cut our losses, they're going to make the best deal we can for you. Instead of doing that, they're doubling down. Instead of taking the first couple of paragraphs of what Fareed Zakaria had said in the Washington Post, look, it's over, they're going to double down. Even Zakaria says, you know, the French might not have a bad idea. You know, some troops might be, I mean, hello, it's really crazy, getting very dangerous. And with the NATO summit coming up in July here in the U.S., and with the European, the EU Parliament elections coming up this summer as well, it's a very big political season, and the political hacks that are in charge in Europe don't seem to have a sensible way of coping with the danger that they're in. So everything, you know, to say that they're hectic, that they're frantic, and that they're a little unleashed, well, Macron is just one of them. The others all fear for not only their careers, but what will happen to them once their people realize that they've been conned, they've been neo-conned.